This is an oral history interview of Dr. Arthur S. Gilson, Jr., done on October 17, 1980. Dr. Gilson was born in Portland, Maine, June 30, 1896, got his undergraduate degree at Dartmouth College in 1919, and his graduate degrees at Harvard, from which he got his Ph.D. in 1924. However, between 1922 and 1924, he was also an instructor in physiology at the Tulane School of Medicine in New Orleans. In 1925, he came to the Washington University School of Medicine in the Department of Physiology under Dr. Erlanger, and he stayed there until his retirement in 1964. He, like Dr. Erlanger and others in the department, were interested in the electrical response of skeletal and cardiac muscle and the excitability and impulse conduction of cardiac muscle. He was also able to develop equations for plotting curves on twitch and muscle tetanus and fatigue of the muscle due to actions of chemicals and other for other reasons. Dr. Gilson was in the laboratory at the same time that Dr. Bishop and Dr. Heinbecker was working on the subject of nerve impulse conduction, and this is what we're going to ask him about today. You mentioned just now, Dr. Gilson, that Dr. Heinbecker was not in the Department of Physiology, yet in the Erlanger papers, which we have in the archives of the library, there is a whole file of arguments with Bishop and Erlanger as to whom Dr. Heinbecker is to report to, whether he should report to Dr. Bishop or report to Dr. Erlanger. And indeed, some people have felt that that was the reason that Bishop finally left the Department of Physiology. Could you comment on that?
Well, it's my recollection that Heinbecker came out here as a fellow National Research Council fellow in surgery.
Yes, he was a surgeon, yes.
He came over to the department as a guest, shall we say.
I see.
But I don't think he ever had an appointment in the Department of Physiology.
Then why do you think that Dr. Erlanger felt that any findings he had should be first reported to him, Erlanger, rather than to anybody else?
Well, I think mainly because Dr. Erlanger felt that he was in charge of the nerve research program that was going on, and in that respect was responsible for whatever came out of that department.
There was a good deal of nerve research that was going on in other departments of the medical school at that time, was there not? I found again in the Erlanger papers a suggestion put together by Dr. Cowdery and Dr. Bishop for an Institute of Neurology, and they listed Heinbecker in surgery and O'Leary in anatomy some of the people in physiology and Bishop himself suggested that it be set up as a separate institute. Were you involved
well,
in any of
that? That was a paper institute for convenience and pulling things together, that was all. It had no formal structure otherwise.
Actually, Dr. Erlanger was not in favor of it at all. He wrote a devastating memo about it in which he said, "I oppose this proposal to the last ditch." Why did Dr. Erlanger not want such an institute? Do you know?
I think simply because he wanted to keep himself independent of what other people were doing.
Mm-hmm. He made a great deal of comment in that memo, which apparently was addressed to the executive faculty, to the fact that he had developed cathode ray oscillograph, and he felt that he should be the one to say who could use it and who not.
Well, he had physically made it. He was Bishop's help.
Yes.
In 1920, I don't know, 3 or 4,
mm-hmm.
the yes. Bell Telephone people reported at the meeting of the Physics Society on the 400-volt cathode ray tube.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Alexander Langsdorff, who was in the engineering school, heard that speech and told Dr. Gasser and Dr. Erlanger about it. And they made arrangements with the Bell Telephone people to obtain these tubes, which were still in experimental state. Then Dr. Erlanger, Dr. Bishop, and Dr. Gasser physically put together the equipment to make them useful, and then that was the beginning of the program.
Where did Dr. Newcomer come in this?
Newcomer was a friend of Gasser's, who was, I think, about 19, maybe 22 or 3, perhaps with Dr. Gasser in the Department of Pharmacology. He was never in the physiology department, I think.
I see. Bishop himself says Gasser and Newcomer and Erlanger fixed up a gas jet for glass making. They first tried to make a brown tube because they couldn't buy one, and having got it all made, they turned the current on and there was an explosion and blew it all to thunder. They forgot to put in a central controlling resistor.
I think that probably so.
Then after that, Bishop helped them to produce another tube.
When I came to town, they got the tubes from the Bell Telephone Laboratories. Bishop made one tube, which I saw,
mm-hmm.
which was around the department for a long time.
Yes, I think we have it in our files.
But that also blew the filament the first time it was used, so it was never very useful.
I would think not. You keep saying Bell Telephone, and I have Western Electric. Are they the same thing?
Yes.
I see.
It was the Bell Telephone Laboratories of the Western Electric Company on Lower Broadway in New York.
Oh, yes. Were you interested in this same problem? Is that why you came to St. Louis?
No, I didn't know anything about it.
Then how did you get into it? Almost immediately.
I never did get into it.
Oh, you never did get into it, but you were working on nerve impulses, too.
Never.
Never?
Never.
My goodness, I have misread all your articles, according to what I...
I don't remember that I ever had anything to do with nerves. Well, I stimulated the vagus nerve of a turtle, but that was because the vagus went to the heart, not because it was the nerve.
You were interested then in cardiac innervation.
I was interested in the cardiac response to innovation, yes.
And had you been, excuse me for being so ignorant, but wasn't the idea of nerve conduction an outgrowth of work on muscle contraction?
No, there was no connection there. That was separate entirely.
In some of your early works, you talk about the development, maintenance, and relaxation of tension and isometric tetanus of skeletal muscle.
Yes.
Was that what you were working on?
That was one of the things I played with, yes. That had nothing to do with the innervation of the muscle.
I see.
No, you should keep anything that I tried to do separate from the... Gasser and Erlanger program entirely.
I see. I had the idea they all meshed in together.
No.
And yet you were a member of the axonologists from the very beginning.
Well, that was, I was one of the people who was around at that time, and that was, it began as a small and very informal group, and I happened to go to dinner that night.
We went to dinner several years, and we have some of the records, and we found it, so I know. What were they like? What were the axonologists like?
Well, it was a group of people who were only a few at the first. There was Rosenblut at Harvard, mm-hmm. and Hal Davis.
Yes.
There was Marshall at Baltimore. And a few other people who mm-hmm. got together quite informally to talk about these things in terms of what was then going on.
And how long did you stay with that group? It lasted for about 15 years.
Oh, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Were you with it all the time, right through?
More or less.
Until World War II. Mm-hmm.
That gradually gave way to the more central nervous system activity, and the axonologist sort of faded out of the picture.
I see. Was that the way that somebody like John Fulton went to the central nervous system?
Yes.
In the department when you came, who was in the department besides Erlanger, Gasser, Schmidt?
No, Schmidt was then an undergraduate.
I see.
Lester White was in the department. Oh. He was working on kidney physiology.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, that was it.
I see. But the department apparently cooperated with other groups. For instance, Laurenta Deneau, who was then at the Central Institute of the Deaf. Did you know him?
Then,
to Laurenta Deneau?
Yes. Loretta Deneau came to St. Louis not knowing the Central Institute of the Deaf, which he'd made arrangements to work,
mm-hmm.
and became a good friend of all of us,
mm-hmm.
but he did his work at the Central Institute.
Mm-hmm. And he was also working on nerve potential?
Yes. He worked into that while he was working. He came here to work on neurohistology. He was working on technique for staining and studying neurons in the cortex, which was his particular field. And while he was doing that, he gradually worked into the electrical recording. Before he left here, he was quite active in that field.
Where had he come from? Do I remember that he had something to do with Ramon y Cajal in Spain?
He studied under Ramon y Cajal. He went from there up to study under Madness. I don't remember where.
Mm-hmm.
And from Magnus's laboratory came to this country.
Mm-hmm.
Over somewhere along there, he also was in Sweden.
And then when he left here, didn't he go to Cornell? I think my father used to talk about him, but I was vague about
I
that.
I think he left here only when, after Gasser had gone to the Rockefeller Institute.
Well, Gasser went from here to Cornell, and then from Cornell to Rockefeller. Do you
suppose? Oh, that's right, in New York City. In New York City.
Yeah, so
that's
he probably
right.
took.
He may have. Yes. I didn't remember that.
Because I remember my father and my brother talking about him. They were both at Cornell. Also working in this field was Helen Graham.
Yes.
Was she working with the people in the Department of Physiology, or was she in the Bishop Heinbecker?
Let's keep it easy. She was in the Department of Pharmacology.
Yes.
She was working with Gasser on another problem entirely, and gradually worked in and set up her own cathodry outfit,
mm-hmm.
and worked independently after Gasser left the city.
She was recommended to, I think by Dr. Erlanger, to be one of the axonologists, but was never elected to it. Is there any, or
I
never invited to join them? Do you have any
I
idea?
Don't know that.
Did they have any women in this axonologist?
I don't know.
Was Ethel Ronzoni Bishop, did she?
No, she was a chemist, strictly.
Uh-huh. Okay. When you came, then that you were one of the very few. If you say there was only Erlanger, Gasser, one other, and you,
right,
and you in the department at the time.
That's right.
What made you come to Washington University from Tulane?
I was looking for a job.
Oh, but you had a job in Tulane.
Yes, I had a job there. But Dr. Gary, who was the head of the department, went to Nashville.
Ah, yes.
And I came up here.
I'm sure you had the chance to go anywhere you wanted at that time. What made you choose Washington University?
Because I was offered a job.
It wasn't the reputation of the people here that you probably didn't know about it.
I didn't know anything except in St. Louis was a city in the Middle West.
You sound like me when I got out of university looking for a job. All I cared for was a job. What was your research before you came here?
Oh, I had done my PhD work on color changes in fishes.
Oh, really?
And got away from that when I went to Tulane.
You were writing your dissertation while you were at Tulane, I gather, because you got your degree after you did.
That's right.
What were you doing at Tulane?
Teaching physiology.
Just basic physiology.
And pharmacology.
Did you feel when you came here that your lack of an MD, just a PhD, was any impediment or didn't make any difference? Didn't make any difference at all. Did you ever work with the cathode ray oscillograph?
Oh, yes.
What was it like to... I used to go occasionally and have tea with Dr. Erlanger before he died, and he used to explain some of the problems, like the streetcars running, which had required him to shut down his work while...
Well, in the early days, the direct heated cathode tubes and the amplifiers were extremely sensitive to microphonic disturbances.
Mm-hmm.
So that anything like shooting off a rifle in the hallway or a truck passing, in spite of the fact that the amplifiers were on a heavy concrete base and so forth, any such disturbance mechanically made trouble. And at that time it was necessary to repeat the spread of the tube several times in order to get a photographic record. So it was quite important that there were no disturbances along the way.
I think somebody here, Bishop, says often we work all day and wind up at 5 o'clock at night with only one good record.
That may well be.
He said the tube wasn't bright enough to get a photograph.
There were a good many simple mechanical and electrical complications, switching noises and so forth.
It must have been very hard to figure out what you got when you finally had a tracing of some kind.
It was. The early records were pretty primitive, but they were a good deal better than the material that had gotten before that with a capillary electrometer or a string galvanometer.
Hallowell Davis said in his interview, which we did a year or two ago, that he didn't think this would work, and he kept working with a string galvanometer until Erlanger showed that it really did, was a better system. Did you spend all of your time here, or did you have a year and go somewhere else the way most of them seem to have done in those days?
No, I was here.
And what was the school like in the 20s?
Very much more comfortable than it is now.
In what way?
It was smaller, much more personal, much more intimate.
Mm-hmm. Even in my time, it's grown enormously.
It has.
It's just out of bounds, I think. It's like a cancer now. Were the heads of the department young, middle-aged, elderly? You were so young, they probably all looked old to you.
Well, they were... Dr. Erlanger was what, in his late 40s perhaps?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He came out here from Johns Hopkins as a young man.
Wisconsin. Went from Johns Hopkins to Wisconsin.
That's right.
Wisconsin here. Uh-huh.
Go on. Gasser was young.
Mm-hmm.
Bishop had taken his PhD right after the end of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
and he had been out of PhD program for 3 years perhaps when he came here.
Do you know what brought him here? He was trained as an engineer.
No. Well, he was trained, his undergraduate work was in engineering. Mm-hmm. His PhD work was in the cytology of the fat gland of the honeybee.
Oh yes, I remember his family.
So that his graduate work was as mm-hmm. a cytologist.
I see.
He went to Memphis as an anatomist and came up here as a electrophysiologist.
I remember now in his autobiography he said that if he ever retired he'd retire as an anatomist and work with honeybees again. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
What was the tenor of the meetings of the axonologists when they met? Was it mostly social, or did they have papers, or what did they do?
Oh, it was primarily social and a change of information, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose someone read a paper sometimes, but
mm-hmm.
at first there was nothing formal about it. It became more formal as it got larger.
As it got larger, it also got more unwieldy, I understand, from some of the people who were there, and that was partly why it was disbanded. Apparently, every member could bring one more member as a guest, and they began to bring two more, and then three
that's
more.
That's more or less true, yes. It was, for a while, a popular branch of rather adventuring into new material entirely.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised when Dr. Gasser and Dr. Erlanger got the Nobel Prize, or had you been in on the negotiations?
I had not been in on the negotiations, no.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Everts Graham, apparently, was one of the people who
I think so.
Made the suggestion and then collected the material to send to it. I'm not really sure now what more to ask you, since I thought that you were working in this group on nerve stimulation. You were interested in the way in which muscle contracts, is that correct?
More or less mechanical responses
mm-hmm.
of muscle and the conduction of impulse through the heart, things of that sort, but not in the sense of the electrophysiology as such.
Wasn't that also some of the work that Dr. Erlanger did at Johns Hopkins? Didn't he work on the atrioventricular bundle?
He did.
And was yours in that same field?
Remotely, yes.
How did they differ?
Well, mainly in a point of attack and interest, and the cold-blooded heart has no differentiated AV bundle,
mm-hmm.
which the mammalian heart has. I worked entirely with cold-blooded hearts,
uh-huh.
and I was working on time relations rather than the actual anatomical structure, which is what Dr. Erlanger had done.
You did that as a continuation of your work on fish, or
was no? I had no relation to that one. No relation to that one.
What caused you to change so violently from fish?
Because I'd had enough of it.
You had fish till they came out of your ears.
More or less.
What did you find about the change in color in fish?
That they did.
It didn't take two years to find that out, I'm sure.
Not much more.
Did you find out when they changed and why they changed?
People had known that before.
Well, what were you trying to investigate?
Well, I was looking at the individual cell processes which carried the chromatic material and the embryology of the cells from which they arose.
And did you find any explanation for?
Well, I found a description at least.
Well, that's the first step. You also did a good deal, I was impressed with the mathematics when you developed equations for plotting curves and twitch and muscle tetanus. What was that all about?
Well, that was largely a contribution by Frank Urban in the chemistry department.
Here? Frank Urban here?
Mm-hmm. He was at that time. But it was a purely empirical piece of curve fitting to what we found experimentally, and we never got much beyond the empirical side of it.
Well, maybe somebody else will come along and find the theory behind
they
it.
Have.
They have since then?
Mm-hmm.
What have they found?
Well, the things leak out here and get in there and cause changes which results eventually in the contraction of the muscle.
Is this now a part of molecular biology rather than
I've never been sure.
Everything these days seems to be molecular biology, so you could always say whatever you want about it. So. I think that everybody is very interested in the personalities of the people who are involved, because personalities have so much to do with what actually happens. And now that all of them are dead, perhaps we could get some kind of picture. What was Dr. Erlanger like? What was Dr. Gasser like? What was Dr. Bishop like? And so on.
Well, Dr. Erlanger liked to run his own department, and Dr. Gasser, after he became established, liked to run his department. Bishop, when the reorganization of the eye and ear departments occurred, Bishop went across the street as physiologist to the ophthalmology department.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. We were spread over a good bit of territory. Heinbecker was in surgery, Bishop was in ophthalmology, Gasser worked in pharmacology.
And O'Leary was in anatomy then?
O'Leary came as an anatomist, yes,
mm-hmm.
and took charge of the neuroanatomy.
How did they get Dr. Cowdery involved in it? He was a histologist, an anatomist.
I didn't know he was involved.
He presented the proposal for the Institute for Neurology that
Well, he liked to propose, but he was not personally involved in any of the work, I think.
No, I think that's true.
Well, he worked, I guess, he did work under Dr. Cowdery.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. In 1928, Dr. Erlanger was very unhappy with Dr. Bishop, so unhappy that he started a file of items on Bishop, memos back and forth and comments and a diary, and I was looking at that this morning. And in that, he made a note to himself that Dr. Gasser refused to work with Dr. Bishop. I've always heard about the problems between Erlanger and Bishop, but this is the first I've ever come across Dr. Gasser.
Well, everyone was quite anxious to keep in track of what they were doing and keep charge of what they were doing, and there was a certain amount of competitive spirit between one group and another, and it was that. After Gasser left town, he and Bishop became very good friends, and so forth.
It was a it was not a disagreement on scientific principles, I take it.
Well, interpretation here and there, perhaps.
Gasser and Erlanger also disagreed on interpretation, but they remained perfectly able to work with each other, and Bishop apparently couldn't work with either one of them. Was Bishop a difficult person, or?
Well, in a way, he was an independent person. He, when we were in the army together, he was told by the commanding officer that he should have been court-martialed and bishop replied that if this had been the real army, he would have been court-martialed. But he afterwards became very good friends again with the neuroanatomist from Chicago.
Ransom?
No. Ransom's
predecessor.
Yes,
he was one of the axonologists, one of the founders of.
Yeah.
I forget his name also. You knew Bishop then before he came here. You were both in the Army together?
We were both in the Army together.
And how did that happen? Was this a particular part of the Army? Because you came from different areas.
It was a group that was officially brought together to cure the Army of infectious meningitis.
Was that also Everett Graham's?
No, he
had empyema.
That's another matter. This group was brought together in Washington around Walter Reed Hospital.
Yes. Uh-huh.
About 20 of us.
Uh-huh.
As far as I know, only one member of the group ever had anything to do with spinal meningitis.
Even though you were brought together for that purpose, you didn't do anything with it?
No.
What did you do instead?
We boiled urine, we counted blood, we did autopsies.
Uh-huh.
We did various things.
You were still in college at that time, mm-hmm. weren't you? Was Bishop also?
Bishop was finishing on his PhD thesis.
So he was ahead of you. What did he do that would have gotten him a court-martial?
I guess he talked back to his commanding officer.
Well, apparently he did that to Erlanger, too. As near as I can make out from reading everything, he treated Erlanger very lightly, and I don't think Erlanger really liked that.
That's possible.
I said before that I used to go around and visit Dr. Erlanger once a week for 3 or 4 years before he died. He was a gentle old soul at that time, but from reading his files, I didn't think he was a very gentle soul when he was head of.
He liked to run his own department.
Uh-huh. And he would not have been very happy with somebody who treated him lightly.
That is true.
Well, that explains a good deal. He seemed also to be a very formal man. Was that true?
Well, he was of another generation, perhaps, from the present one.
Well, he seemed formal even in his generation, if I can tell from reading other people's. You know, we are collecting the papers of a great many of the people who are so important here in the medical school. We have Everett Graham's and Erlanger's and Hallowell Davis and Helen Graham and a great many others. And I hope, Dr. Gilson, that you, if you have any still with you, that you will give them to us or leave them.
If I have any, I will, yeah.
Very good. Any correspondence?
I never write letters.
What I was saying as we came up that you write one or two sentence letters, and I wondered if we were going to get any more than that this afternoon. But any laboratory notebooks or any things which show...
Those have all been thrown out.
That's what we're always afraid of. It's in the history of science, one likes to know how somebody grew in his idea about his work, and I'm always very sad when I hear that they've been thrown out. Would there be any left in the Department of Physiology, do you think?
As far as I know, the department was stripped of everything.
Mm-hmm. When Dr. White became head of the department, or after Dr. White?
Well, more or less at the end of White's time, the department was physically reorganized.
Yes.
And at that time, everything that was not in immediate use, I think, was just disposed of.
Well, that's too bad, because I was here at that time and I never got around to doing anything about it. It's unfortunate, because I think that there was a lot that we should have gotten. Do you know that Louise Marshall is writing with Magoon? I'm not sure if you know Magoon here.
Oh, yeah.
In UCLA. She's writing a history of neurophysiology, and one section is on the axonologists, And she has been using our materials. She says we have the largest collection of any place in the United States on the axonologist. There are bits and pieces all over in other
that
places.
May be.
And it would be nice if she could also use your papers, and I'm sorry that you've
Well, as I say, my papers had nothing to do with the axonology program proper.
Well, they will be of importance to show the menu of the physiology department at the time.
Well, the outgrowth of that of the Ryland in Brussels, Monnier in Paris, those people were more concerned with the continuing of the program they started here.
They all worked here at one
yes.
time and then spread out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, were there many of the people who worked here who became heads of departments in other medical schools?
Well, Frank Schmidt took
mm-hmm.
a PhD under Dr. Erlanger.
Mm-hmm.
He went to MIT. Blair went to Texas.
Mm-hmm. Was this Blair the same Blair that Nancy Blair O'Leary of Villanova?
Oh, no,
that's a different
no,
Blair.
Entirely different.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Nor was he the one who was at Buffalo at Rochester.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Is there anything more about the axonologists or about the development of the Department of Physiology in the school or anything about the school that you think people 10 years from now would like to know that I haven't thought to ask?
No, I think it started. The department simply grew and the people who knew each other personally spread out and the growth grew that way rather than any more direct method of growth that I know of. There was no more growth in the neurophysiology in particular, excepting as O'Leary and his people worked until Dr. Hunt came in.
Mm-hmm. Why did Dr. White's period not go in for work in neurophysiology?
Hmm?
Dr. White, Lester White, when he
was... He simply wasn't interested in it.
Was he interested in something else?
He was a kidney physiologist.
You mentioned that before.
Strictly.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Anderson is new to our medical center, and so he doesn't have a very deep knowledge of it, and that's why I am asking all the questions. But as an archivist, are there any questions that you think we should ask Dr. Nielsen while we have him under our thumb, as it were?
Well, you've been good enough to ask whether there are any papers that Dr. Gilson might give us, and he's said no, so that concludes my area of expertise right there. But it's been a pleasure hearing you.
We're very grateful to you for taking the time to talk.
Well, you're
to
quite
us.
Welcome. As I say, I think you came here under false illusions, but
you're
welcome.
Thank you very much. I was uninformed about your work, which I thought was in the axonologist, but I'm not sorry we came, because I think we got a very good view of what the medical school and the Department of Physiology was in the 20s and 30s. And we've really taken an hour of your time, so I think that we're very grateful to you. And
you're
if
welcome.
You do come across anything in your files as you're going through them, please do
I will.
Let us know and we'll come and pick them up.
I will.
Good. Thank you.